This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox podcast. I am a very stuffy Dan Favalli coming at you with my super duper, incredibly esteemed, awesome times awesome, fantabulous, spectacularario, roughly 48 hours away from crushing some cinnamon buns and chili co-host Andrew D. Belly. Before we get started, we just want to, one, wish everybody a happy, healthy, and safe Thanksgiving, which will be coming up. We hope you're listening to this as you're traveling to wherever you need to go, or maybe you, unlike many others, are able to just relax around the holidays and are just taking some time, holding a snifter of apple cider and something to eat, and just listening to us podcast in the dark as you just let yourself be super serene and calm. That is the dream that we are envisioning here for you at Hardwood Knox. And we also want to continue reminding, imploring, begging, and pleading with everyone to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Still the best way to help out the pod. We can be found wherever else podcasts are found, including Spotify, Stitcher, all those great places. But iTunes is still the best way to let us know that you're listening and that you love /hate/hate love us. We're going to talk some Wizards today, though, just in the aftermath of the report from Adrian Wojnarowski that they're finally open to trading just about anyone on the team, including John Wall, Bradley Beal, and Otto Porter Jr. We've got some good trades for you. There might be some good J.R. Smith talk. This podcast seems ill-timed because we're recording it after the Wizards came from... they were behind the Clippers by 24 points.
Yeah.
And they came back and won it. But still, that team, looking at their cap situation, still verges on kind of hopeless. So this is still an interesting discussion to have, particularly about how we view their contracts. As I continue rambling, though, we do have to get the most important part of this podcast out of the way and ask Andy, how are you doing?
always the most important part. I'm doing good. I was surprised by that comeback win. I wasn't watching the first half. I just saw the halftime score and just assumed it was over. And then I worked out and got done about halfway through the fourth quarter and checked the score and just couldn't believe it. So they must have shown some life throughout the second half. I watched the last 6 or 7 minutes or so, and it was kind of a reminder that this team, it's talented. And we've kind of been waiting for it to all click into place for 3 or 4 years now. And instead of clicking into a good place, it seems like it's clicked into a bad place somehow. And it's just everything combusted. Some of these guys are more tradable than others. I know you had a Bleacher Report piece that detailed some possible trades. So we'll talk about those. But it's just interesting that we've been waiting for this team to figure it out for so long, and maybe we should have realized earlier that doesn't it seem like in theory these pieces should still fit?
Yeah, I mean, not much has changed from last season on, and watching that game against the Clippers was the full Wizards experience. You go from shooting, they shot 33% from the floor in the first quarter, route scored by 19 points, didn't look like they gave a damn on defense. There was this play where Montrezl Harrell's really good. He should not be beating you from the top of the key off the dribble. He just went right around Markieff Morris, and there was no help defense around the rim. And then let's fast forward now to the fourth quarter, and they outscore the Clippers. I think it was 39-23. They shot 65% from the floor, and they were playing some really good defense. Bradley Beal was fantastic at that end in the fourth quarter. Markieff Morris gave them good minutes there. John Wall provided some nice help defense. And then, again, they were shooting 65% from the floor, and they were really attacking. Wall, you can still tell he's just not as fast or explosive as he once was, but he's still really fast and can just get around guys. And so it's just night and day in the same game. And maybe it's encouraging that they did that in response to Woj's report, in response to all this drama. But this team has just looked defeated for most of this year. And when you kind of look at their salary cap situation, they're going to owe next season. It's going to be 90, I forget what the exact number is, but it's like $93 million or close to it to Otto Porter, John Wall, and Bradley Beal. And when you factor in Jan Mahinmi's salary, Dwight Howard's player option, free agencies from Thomas Satoransky, who, by the way, is playing real minutes again. That took way too long for the Wizards to do. Also restricted free agency for Kelly Oubre. Markieff Morris is a free agent. There's just no way for them to keep this team together and not have a payroll that just cannonballs deep into the luxury tax. And that's why you have to, whether you're looking at it from this perspective and saying, hey, if we trade Otto Porter Jr., we can still be good. If we just get some spare parts in return, even if it ends up being a straight salary dump, that might be one route to go. Or the more drastic route, and what I would prefer from the outside that they do or think is the smarter move, just tear it down. And I know some people say they shouldn't even trade Bradley Beal, but he's going to be a free agent in 2021. And what are you going to do over the next 2 years if you sell off John Wall and Otto Porter that will convince him to stay? So their payroll situation just seems really untenable. And unless they're just going to go on a tear now for a month or two to where you can convince the owner, the general manager, to not make a move, it just seems that breaking them up is the smarter, more prudent play at this point.
Yeah, as soon as that report came out, whatever it was a few days ago, that my first thought was, is there any way they can trade all three of them? Because I think they got to scrap it and start over as well. The difficult one, obviously, or the most difficult, I guess no trade is easy, but moving John Wall anywhere, it's almost prohibitive. I he's got 3-4 years left after this one. Let me see.
Who's this, four Wall?
Left after this season. Yeah. Last one, 22-23, is for almost $50 million. We have no idea what the cap will be that season, but I can't imagine that'll be at least 40% of the cap, I would think, on a guy who will be in his age
32, 33
season. Yeah. He's got a 15% trade kicker right now. I think everybody's kind of looking at the Phoenix Suns as the lone possibility to take on John Wall. And I get that. He might be kind of interesting there. But that deal is just going to be so, so hard to move. I mean, that's the only fake trade that you have for John Wall, right?
Yeah, I have. I spitballed some other ideas before we started this, but the one that I've proposed before and wrote about was the Phoenix Suns receive Kelly Oubre and John Wall, and then the Wizards receive Dragan Bender, Josh Jackson, T.J. Warren, and a 2020 second round pick. Alert. 2020 second round pick. I don't know why I added alert after that. That almost seems, a lot of people thought, one, that Trevor Ariza would eventually be included in any deal because of his expiring salary. If I'm the Suns and I'm trading for John Wall, I don't want to give up Trevor Ariza. They've played together before, and if you're bringing on Wall's payroll, you're going to want a veteran like Ariza who can theoretically stretch the floor around him, even though his shooting has been up and down this year. The other pieces of the trade, if I'm Phoenix, I don't have any pause about. You've already declined the team option on Bender. Josh Jackson, it seems like they're already out on him. He has not played a bunch under Igor Kokoschkov. And I know Jackson had that kind of hot end to last year, but it was still with wonky efficiency, and his just the nuts and bolts of his offensive game just look off when you look at his free throw shooting, his jump shot form, and how long it takes him to fire off threes. It's awkward, but he has two more years after this one left on his rookie scale deal. Looking at it from the Wizards' perspective, is a top five prospect from the 2017 draft. TJ Warren is the one that's going to give you pause, though, if you're Phoenix, because he's making threes now. He's a proven scorer. We've seen it from him in the past. His four-year, $50 million extension kind of looks like it should be market value right about now. At the same time, you do have all these other wings if you're keeping Ariza. When you look at Bridges, Booker, if you want to throw him in there. So I think he would be expendable in such a trade. You're getting Oubre back, and maybe you're able to maybe he proves affordable in restricted free agency or something. And I know this obliterates their cap space for this summer, but it was going to take some hoop jumping for them to really get to max money anyway. And Phoenix is not just this free agent destination. They've been after a point guard for a while. Former general manager Ryan McDonough was fired, at least in part, because he couldn't get one. I would think that of all teams that might possibly potentially trade for John Wall, that this is, of course, the cliche destination, but mostly because I think that it actually works.
Yeah. A John Wall, Devin Booker backcourt is, at the very least, interesting. If I'm Washington, I think I would insist on the big money coming back being Ariza. Really? Just because it's the expiring contract. If I'm Washington, my number one goal on all of these is to just wipe the slate clean. You laid it out earlier. They put themselves in such a terrible, terrible cap situation that they can't really do anything if they've got two of those guys on the books going forward. So if they can get rid of two or even three of them, I think that changes their outlook quite a bit. I would just be looking for expiring contracts on all three of these guys. Maybe you can get some interesting player. Maybe you still have some, I don't know, moderate interest in Josh Jackson. Maybe you think you can fix the mechanical stuff that you mentioned. If I'm Phoenix, I would not want to be giving up Michael Bridges or Eli Okobo. Those guys are still interesting for the Suns. But yeah, I think my overarching goal on all these deals is probably going to be to get off money and to get off money as quick as possible. I mean, the one that you laid out, they're definitely getting off money. But I mean, if you can get free and clear of the John Wall cap hit, then I think you got to do that.
Well, I don't think you're going to get resistance from Phoenix to include Trevor Ariza instead of TJ Warren. I guess if you're getting Josh Jackson and maybe a second round pick, it's fine. My whole thing is that, at least I guess in this instance, I would agree with you. If you can just get salary cap relief from moving John Wall, then I think you do it, because that he's, again, his extension, 4 years, $170.9 million. So, I would understand that. And maybe if you're Phoenix, you prefer to have TJ Warren on the books. He's also only 25, though, and that might be interesting from Washington's perspective. We don't know what they're looking to, for all this talk about them trading these guys. There hasn't been talk of, you know, owner Ted Linus wanting a rebuild. It's just been, oh, they're open to moving players. And even in Woj's report, it said the preference was to continue retooling around Beal and Wall. And Warren would probably intrigue them a little bit more if they're looking to stay relevant while moving their most marquee player, even though Bradley Beal is probably better at this point. Again, if you can get out from under that contract, I guess you do it. I wonder. That's what makes this so difficult. I think with Bradley Beal, you're probably looking for real value in return. But yes, with Porter and Wall, I like Porter, but he definitely is overpaid. With those two contracts, you're probably just looking to get out from under them in general. Which, if they are just looking for salary cap relief, and I know this, I mean, it's probably going to make you vomit, but, you know, the Utah Jazz have a bunch of expiring contracts, and they could really use a point guard, another point guard besides Donovan Mitchell.
I mean, I'd be all for them taking on Bradley Beal or Otto Porter.
Neither of those are point guards.
No, they're not. But I just if I'm a general manager, I don't want that contract.
Right. He's like the anti Quinn Snyder player, but
yeah, I mean it doesn't work for Utah. They do make sense as a landing spot for, I think Porter is the easier get, obviously. But Beal would be interesting there too. The idea of a Donovan Mitchell, Bradley Beal backcourt is very, very intriguing to me. But again, it just depends on what Washington's goal is. If they want to, you know, scrap everything, start fresh, Utah is one of the teams that's primed as much as any to help. They've got Rubio is expiring, Burks, Cephalosha, Udo, Favors is basically expiring because they can non-guarantee him up until July 9th or something like that. So there's a bunch of expiring deals they could send out. So they're an interesting one. If, like Woj said, if their goal is to continue to retool and build around John Wall and Bradley Beal, that's a different situation. I don't really understand why they do that. I don't think the reason they're spinning their wheels is because of Otto Porter. I mean, the whole thing just doesn't make sense to me. There's got to be at least somebody in that front office who thinks, no, our actual goal should be I've said it like five times now, but to scrap this situation and just have a fresh start.
I was going to focus on Wall first, but since we're on the Jazz, one of the things that I came up with, I don't know how, again, I don't know that this would get you Bradley Beal, but Ricky Rubio, Cephalosha, Grayson Allen, a first round pick, a second round pick for Bradley Beal and Kelly Oubre Jr.
I think it just depends on if Washington wants cap space, then I think that's a great deal for him, actually.
It saves them about $6.3 million this season, which brings them oh so close to avoiding the luxury tax, which is something else that's going to be important for them if they're selling off, particularly Beal. They're about $7.8 million. I have them over the luxury tax right now. So if you can save that kind of money and you're getting a couple picks in Grayson Allen and two expiring contracts, that's definitely something maybe they would consider. It seems that would be on the lower end for Beal, just because to acquire a 25-year-old who's an all-star with 2 years left on his contract is typically pretty hard to do. But he would be a nice fit in Utah. I just, looking at it from the Wizards' perspective, I think they would be more inclined to champion your thinking when they're moving Porter and Wall as opposed to Beal. He seems like someone they'll be more bullish on when it comes to the return.
He'll be the hardest one to get for other teams, I'm sure. And it makes sense. He makes the most sense in today's NBA. Well, Otto Porter does too, if he's in the right situation. He hasn't looked the same this year, but I think it's just a product of circumstance with him. I think that deal is very interesting, and maybe I'm just being a homer here, but again, I'll probably say this over and over and over the course of this podcast, but it just has a lot to do with what Washington wants. And I think that that's a deal that makes a lot of sense for them to get out from under those contracts.
For John Wall, staying with him, I'm not going to suggest an Orlando Magic trade because I don't think that he supersedes their timeline just when you look at his age. And it seems like that front office with John Hammond is just going to be a little bit more meticulous and gradual in their rebuild. Wouldn't it? I know in Minnesota that Glenn Taylor has kind of taken over or had Scott Layden focusing on the basketball operations side now and wants Tom Thibodeau just to coach. But what if Tibbs just went nuclear and still had a say? Or if Glenn Taylor was just interested in still being relevant and you build, there are issues because one, Minnesota is close to the luxury tax line. I think they're like $2.9 million over the tax or around that number, close to $3 million below the tax, excuse me. And John Wall's trade kicker, the way it's structured, Zach Lowe wrote about this for ESPN, is it's so weird because trade kickers can't elevate your max salary above the actual max that you're allowed. But John Wall is now being traded while he's on a below max contract. So if there's a lump sum involved, yes, the Wizards pay it, but he counts when you're looking at incoming salary for the Timberwolves as this huge number there would probably need to be either a really lopsided package being sent to Washington, or you just players waive trade kickers, or they lower them, renegotiate them all the time. But I'm just saying, looking at their raw salary, Jeff Teague and John Wall match up almost perfectly. And if you build a package around Jeff Teague and you're Minnesota and you're saying, well, Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns are about to be on maxes. We were going to pay Jimmy Butler the max. We're not going to have cap space for a zillion years anyway. This would be a way for us to kind of stay afloat or relevant in the Western Conference. And I will say this about John Wall. I'm not the biggest John Wall fan, at least looking at him as he seems a little flawed as a leader. And then his decision making down the stretch of games, just it always seems bad. He has his like moments, and he is a really good basketball player, fantastic passer, that we talk about him being on the athletic decline, and he still can just go around almost anyone. Still a good defender when he tries, which seems to happen, or is really locked in, which seems to happen less and less. He's not someone that I would worry about putting around a developing guy like Towns, because it seems like with just the way he plays that it might actually help Towns out a little bit. That might just be something to consider, though, is that the Timberwolves don't have all these, you know, I'm not giving up Robert Covington in that deal if I'm them, but you have Jared Bayless's expiring contract still. I don't know that I'd give him up, but Anthony Tolliver would eventually be after December 14th. You can move him. You have Taj Gibson's expiring contract if you're really trying to work out a bigger deal. And while Jeff Teague is fine, you know, he's fine. But you have Derrick Rose expiring contract, Tyus Jones expiring contract. The future at point guard is still sort of up in the air in Minnesota. And just knowing they lost Butler, but they still kind of want to win, if that's the assumption, I wonder if they're a team that could talk themselves into this move.
First of all, the future of the point guard position in Minnesota is Derrick Rose. I thought you should know that.
Oh, man. Not if Tibbs gets fired, it's not.
Yeah, there you go. I was going to say, at least according to Tibbs, but who knows how long he'll be there. Yeah, this is an interesting one, too. I've heard some, I think it was Zach Lowe on his podcast, was saying that maybe they could work out some deal where they're able to get out of Andrew Wiggins' contract. But I don't see how he would be appealing to the Wizards. Especially if you now have Wiggins, Porter, and Beal. It's just an odd fit. I think your alignment makes more sense, just from a fit perspective. That's another deal that's going to be really hard to trade, is Andrew Wiggins. So I think they could talk themselves into it for all the reasons that you laid out. We're not going to have cap space for a while anyway. Let's just sort of double and maybe like triple down on what we're doing here. And I don't know if that makes them. They're probably still just like a fringe playoff team in the West, wouldn't you say, with John Wall there, Jeff Teague?
I think they're about 13 or 14 fringe playoff teams in the West, it feels like. I would think that getting John Wall makes them better if they're not giving up Robert Covington in that deal. If they're giving up Wiggins in that deal, then they're certainly getting better, but they're not. Washington's not taking out Wiggins.
No, I don't think they would either. If their lineup then goes, I guess, Wall, Wiggins, Covington, Saric, Towns. Yeah, that's a pretty interesting starting five at the very least. But I still don't know if it elevates them beyond that huge group of teams in the, I don't know, we'll say like 3 to 12 range right now.
That would be one of my favorite landing spots for Wall, though, just because I would like to see him play with Karl Anthony Towns a little bit.
Yeah, that could be interesting. Pick and pops with those two would certainly be interesting. John Wall doesn't command a ton of attention as a shooter, but Karl Anthony Towns does. So I think you have some interesting possibilities there.
John Wall was knocking down some pull-up threes against the Clippers, so yeah, that game got weird.
A couple of those every week, probably.
Yeah. The other destination that people have talked about a lot for John Wall, and I think it makes sense because – and they're the Heat. Sorry for not even mentioning their name. Pat Riley is – I think he's like 90 now and has no interest in a rebuild. Maybe he wouldn't shy away from taking on John Wall's money. But as you've been pretty – as you've been pretty committed to saying that the Wizards are going to want to save money and at least short term, the Heat are not the team that you can do that with. You can cobble together deals that are just going to be come off the books sooner than Walls would, but then they have to start talking themselves into, okay, would we want Hassan Whiteside just because he comes off the books in 2020? Tyler Johnson, same difference. But that's something that would be appealing as well. And then what would make it even more interesting is finding out where the Heat are on Goran Dragic. Has a player option for this summer? My guess is he'll decline it, but I could also see him being the Paul Millsap type player, maybe even the Harrison Barnes player that opts out, and or Al Horford to sign a longer term deal just with more guaranteed money. If Miami isn't planning on playing Dragic and Wall together, which would actually be interesting, then all of a sudden deals become easy to put together if you build stuff around him. Without him, though, I think you get to a point where you're talking about Tyler Johnson. And then can you give them, you know, I don't even know what you could give them. Rodney Magruder, who is having a pretty good year, has cooled off a little bit since the beginning of the season, but I've actually always liked him, and he was injured last year, but he was exceeding even my expectations at the beginning of this year. You could start to build some interesting stuff there. If you're the Wizards and Goran Dragic just isn't in that deal, are you considering one built around Tyler Johnson and let's say Rodney Magruder, and let's say there's a future pick? I don't even know if you're getting – I would say the Heat are more inclined to give up a pick than other teams. At the same time, they're – it would have to be this year's because their 2021 pick is going to Phoenix at this point. Or no, excuse me, he's going to Philly. Forgot about that trade for a minute. Is that something, if you're getting a first-round pick and Tyler Johnson's going to come off the books after next year, and maybe you're even picking up a Rodney Magruder, is that something that you're thinking about?
Magruder's about the only interesting young guy they would include, right? I wouldn't give up Adebayo for John Wall, I don't think.
I would give up Justice Winslow in a heartbeat. I know his...
Winslow, but I don't know how interesting he is anymore for other teams in the league.
Do you think it's worth a flyer on him? So one, he's a poison pill. And so his salary is going to be the average salary that he has over the next... with his three-year $33 million... $39 million extension... it's going to be an average salary, which is including this year's. I think that's going to come out to, he counts as like $10 million in incoming salary all of a sudden. And that's a little tough to work out.
For trade purposes or for cap purposes or both?
It's for, so the Wizards, if they're taking on Justice Winslow, it's like them taking on $10 million in salary. But okay. When the Heat, for outgoing purposes, I believe he still only counts at his original number, which is $3.5 million this year. There are still, because both the Wizards and the Heat have such monstrous deals on their books, you could still work something out. But I think his extension, I don't think he's worth $13 million a year, but the final year of that extension is a team option. And so you could look at it as a two-year $26 million deal, still young, plays defense. He would be a player, if you could make it work, and perhaps there's a way to get there, you probably have to take on one of Washington's other big deals, though, is where it starts to get tricky. But I would move him in that deal if you can work it in a heartbeat. I still, if I'm Washington, if it's built around Tyler Johnson and a pick, and let's say they're giving Rodney Magruder, I do that if I'm Washington, though. I don't know if I do that if I'm Miami.
Yeah, I think you make a good – I mean, this one depends a lot on how Pat Riley feels. And I think it's good that you started off this discussion with that, because – they're actually like closing in on some flexibility. Whiteside, Johnson, and Dragic all have a year left after this one, and their books are suddenly much more manageable after that. And if you trade one or two of those guys for John Wall, whatever team takes on John Wall is basically saying, we don't care about flexibility for the next 4 years.
Right.
And I think you could see Miami being one of those teams for the exact reason that you already stated, that Pat Riley's never really been one to go for the all-out tear down and rebuild strategy. So they're an interesting one. I think there are other teams that could offer expirings that maybe would entice Washington a little bit more. But these, while they're not expiring contracts, they're certainly saving a lot of money. If you have Goran Dragic on your books instead of John Wall, or if you have Tyler Johnson on your books instead of John Wall, you get out from under that contract much, much easier than you would if it was still on the team, of course. So that's, long story short, I like that one too.
Do you? My counterpoint to you when you were talking about there are teams that could send expiring contracts to Washington, my counterpoint would be, are there? Like, who is, what are the teams with expiring contracts that actually, maybe it's Phoenix, again, if you're saying they're going to include Ariza, but where are the other teams that are, you just said the Jazz wouldn't do it, and I agree with you, just where are the other teams that are sending expiring contracts over for John Wall?
How many years are left for Teague?
He has a player option for next year that I assume he will exercise.
So yeah, maybe it is just Phoenix.
You have to look at this as if I'm Washington for Wall as a longer term savings game. He has 4 years and $170.9 million. I'm just disincluding
if you get somebody back who only has 1 year left on your contract, you're saving a ton of money.
Right. I'd rather pay. Do you want to pay? Let's just exclude this season since we're into it. Would you rather pay John Wall $170.9 million over the next 4 years, or do you just want to eat a $19.3 million season from Tyler Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, if it's me, I'm definitely taking the Tyler Johnson option. There's a lot of contracts that are 2 or 3 years long that are going to save the Wizards money.
It's so weird to say that because Wall can still be a really good player, an all-star, a star, but his contract is just
His contract so bad. Is awful, and I just think it's one of those situations that's where it's time. It's more than run its course for him personally and just for the Wizards in general. It's a mess at this point.
And for the record, just so this isn't, if people think this is turning into a hating John Wall podcast, I'm going to have very similar sentiments if we were trying to trade Russell Westbrook from the Oklahoma City Thunder.
That'll be a tough one too.
He's better than John Wall though. And I think you wouldn't have as much problem finding a home, but I don't think if you put him on the trade block today that he's going to yield a ton of value. Your primary goal would have to be, we need to save long-term money.
Yeah. How many is Wall going to be on the Supermax? Is that what he signed?
Yeah.
How many of those are going to be, let's just say, even like decent deals?
If Anthony Davis signs one, I think Stephen Curry's is going to be fine. He's already in year two of it.
I think for the most part, it's just going to, I mean, if you sign those deals, you're just potentially cratering.
I think it was Andy Glockner on Twitter was suggesting that the NBA needs to come out where these supermaxes exist, but the real incentive to keeping the player is that the extra layer of salary, you know, the 35%, that extra 5% or something doesn't count towards your payroll and for tax purposes, maybe even as well, because it really, these put you in a bind.
That's an interesting idea.
I think he's mentioned it before too. And this is not something I've thought about at all. I've thought about how these supermaxes, while they've tried to help teams keep incoming players, they've actually kind of forced some tough decisions and maybe scared some teams it has scared teams into some trades. It's just, and his point, I mean, Russell Westbrook's a perfect example. He could be a top 10 player right now. The prospect of paying him $47.1 million in 2022-2023 is absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows where he'll be health-wise at that point, too. And a guy who plays as hard every single night as he does, there's certainly the possibility of wear and tear. This is related to nothing, but on the
love it
on the Real GM Trade Checker, they have everybody's like full names, and I never knew Ty Lawson's name was Tywan Lawson, which reminds me of Tywin Lannister. All right, moving forward.
That's an interesting factoid. Look, you learn all sorts of stuff on this podcast.
I was messing with these last night with the Raptors. And do you know OG Anunoby's real name?
Oh, I thought you were about to propose a John Wall to the Raptors trade, and my heart started.
I was asked that on a radio station last night. Is how can the Raptors get Bradley Beal? And I just don't think they have enough movable pieces right now, I think, to be one of these players. But OG's real name was like Ogagwa or something like that.
I have seen it. I'm not even going to try and pronounce it because I'll end up insulting him.
Yeah, I probably just butchered it right there. Ogugwa. I kind of like that more than OG, but that's just me.
The Raptors, if they really wanted Beal, I think they could get him. They would have to trade some of their more intriguing younger pieces, though, and I just don't. I don't want to give up Pascal Siakam if I'm them. But you can if the Wizards are looking for salary cap relief, you can build deals around
Danny. I guess Danny Green's expiring, so that's interesting. He's been fantastic for them.
Yeah, and then, I mean, you have CJ Miles has a player option for next year, and he makes basically no money, so there's things you can do there. You do have salary filler if you wanted to anchor a deal around Valanciunas or Ibaka, and you're still sending the Wizards younger players. Maybe they like Norman Powell. There are permutations that I think could get you there. If I'm the Raptors, though, I don't want to touch something. I don't want to. If it's not broke, don't fix it, basically, for them.
That's kind of how I feel. I honestly think the Warriors will probably get on track, but right now, as of this moment, the Raptors might be the best team in the NBA.
Yeah, there's definitely – I think the Warriors will get there, but there's definitely a case – they're certainly, to me, the biggest threat to the Warriors in the NBA right now.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that.
You have any other wall destinations?
No. The one that I thought made sense was Phoenix, so you already coaxed more out of me than I expected.
Let's move on to – who you want to talk about, Otto Porter packages or Bradley Beal packages?
Let's do Porter.
He's weird because he's a good player as well and sort of this plug-and-play stud, but at his pay grade, it changes the calculus of how you can move him. He's, after this season, assuming he picks up the player option on his final year, which he will, he's owed $55.8 million for the next two seasons. And I don't think he's a player that you necessarily want to salary dump. At the same time, I think that's the extent of Washington's options. And so one of the deals I proposed, I have the Indiana Pacers receiving Thomas Bryant and Otto Porter, and the Wizards getting Darren Collison, an expiring contract, Doug McDermott, the first season of a three-year, $22 million deal, Kyle O'Quinn, an expiring contract, and then a 2019 first-round pick, top 20 protection.
Okay, throw it at me again.
Pacers get Thomas Bryant and Otto Porter. Wizards get Darren Collison, Doug McDermott, Kyle O'Quinn, and a 2019 top 20 protected first-round pick.
Okay, so you texted this one to me a few days ago, and I was kind of hesitant until I watched the Pacers destroy the Jazz. And a big part of that destruction was Aaron Holiday, who's been good for them for the last few games. So trading their starting point guard to get more of like a versatile combo forward who can guard a bunch of positions was that's suddenly kind of interesting to me, because not only has Aaron Holiday been good for the last couple of games, Corey Joseph has been excellent for them all season. So you just kind of repurpose their point guard rotation to be Joseph and Holiday.
Give Tyreek Evans maybe a little bit more touches.
Yeah. And I guess your starting lineup at that point is Joseph, Oladipo, Bogdanovich still. Maybe I think I would actually go Holiday, or geez, I'm all over the place. Joseph, Oladipo, Porter, keep Young in the starting lineup, and I guess Miles Turner, but I've been Sabonis over Turner for the last couple of years, but that's just me. Anyway, I think that deal is very, very interesting. It just makes them a little bit more versatile defensively, I think.
I'm with you there. I almost wonder though if including the pick is too much for them. At the same time, they're basically sending over a bunch of placeholders. And while Doug McDermott would be a fit for the current Wizards roster, if they go into a rebuild and John Wall isn't your point guard, I don't know how valuable someone who is best as a standstill shooter or a half pinball shooter is going to be to them. And if you're, you know what, if you're sending over a top 20 protected pick, you had a good year.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I find that one interesting. I think you're defensively, Joseph Oladipo, Porter, Young, and Turner. That's about as strong a defensive five as you're going to get, I think.
This is a trade that I believe I proposed on a previous podcast reporter, but the Blazers get Thomas Bryant and Otto Porter, and the Wizards get Mo Harkless, Myers Leonard, Anfernee Simons, who I like to call Simmons sometimes for some reason, and a lottery-protected first-round pick in 2019.
Thomas Bryant and Porter for Harkless, Simons,
Leonard, and a lottery-protected first this year. Blazers Twitter actually got a hold of this deal, and the response to it was actually, there were the normal, like, well, I would try and not have to give up a first-round pick and Simons, which I guess if Washington wants to do a straight salary dump, then maybe you can get away with not including Simons or that first-round pick. It's possible. I would think you would have to include one of them if you want Washington to take on the final year of Leonard's deal. He comes off the books in 2020. That being said, and I know there are a lot of people that would argue Harkless could probably give you, when he's healthy, 75%, 70%, two-thirds of what Otto Porter gives you. But I don't think there's – right now when you look at some of Portland's best wing options, they're just not volume three-point shooters. And Otto Porter isn't taking a ton of threes this year, but he attempts noticeably more per 36 minutes than a Harkless, than a guy like Harkless. So if you can get the defensive versatility while just increasing your – or diversifying your offensive volume and three-point volume overall – I would think that's something for the Blazers. That's something that I would take a swing at. And Porter comes off the books the same year as Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. I know there might be a hope that the Blazers are going to carve out cap space in 2020 once Evan Turner comes off the books, but it's going to be tough with their two stars and Nurkic on the books as well at that point.
I like this one too. I think you, like you said, you could talk yourself into thinking that Harkless can give you, I don't know, 70-75% of what Porter does. But if we just look at Porter through the lens of 2016-17 and 2017-18, I think he's a lot more valuable than what he's showing this season. And I think most teams probably understand that. He's a guy who for those 2 years was over 60% true shooting, nearly a four box plus minus. He doesn't create a ton of his own stuff, but that's fine on the Blazers because you've got Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum who are all about doing that. If he's suddenly sort of the release valve for their one-on-one stuff, I do think that raises their ceiling a little bit. They've always been kind of one guy short in that starting lineup for the last two or three years, and that would be a really interesting option as that one guy. They would be left with, I guess Jake Layman would or then they could start Porter Aminu at the three and the four. I was thinking Layman and Porter three and the four, but they'd probably still start Aminu. Lillard, McCollum, Porter, Aminu, and Nurkic. And Nurkic, who's been much better this year than he has in previous years. That's a really interesting starting group too.
I have two more Otto Porter trades for you.
Let's do it.
This one is something. That's all I'm going to say. Is if you're the Wizards and you're looking to get off of Porter's money, the deal for me is with Milwaukee. And would they take on John Henson, Dellavedova, Dante DiVincenzo, and I'm going to say two future seconds, and they send out Kelly Oubre and Otto Porter Jr. The alternative to this deal is they can take on Tony Snell instead of Henson or Dellavedova. The issue there then becomes, though, that Snell has two more years left on his contract after this one, as opposed to both Deli and Henson, who would be expiring next season. You're not treating Otto Porter or even Oubre as an asset, really, in this trade. You're taking basically a late first-round flyer with DiVincenzo, and if Milwaukee's going to give you a second round pick or two. You're just looking at it as, hey, we get out of the final year of Porter's deal at that point, and then Dellavedova and Hempson are cheaper than Porter is going to be when you give them their combined salaries. But is that worth DiVincenzo and then a 2020 and 2021 second round pick? I would love to see Porter in Milwaukee, though. That seems like a good fit for him and something that would definitely raise the Bucks' ceiling.
Yeah, and they're all about length there in Milwaukee, so that would certainly fit their MO. It does save Washington some money, like you said. I guess they would go Bledsoe, Middleton, Antetokounmpo, Porter, and Lopez. Yeah, that's a really interesting starting group as well. As usual, you're batting 1,000 here with these fake trades. I like this one.
So here's my last Otto Porter trade, and this gets a little weird as well. The Spurs. So
interesting.
This would have to happen after December 14th, but you trade Pau Gasol, Rudy Gay, and Quincy Pondexter.
I still can't believe that Pau Gasol contract exists.
Yeah. You trade those three for Porter and Kelly Oubre. Maybe you get the Spurs to give you a second-round pick. They're not giving you a first-round pick because they're the Spurs. They're not going to give you Lonnie Walker because they're the Spurs. They're not going to give you Derek White or Bryn Forbes because they're the Spurs. But they could give them a 2019 second-rounder. They give them a 2020 second-rounder as well. This move just keeps San Antonio under the luxury tax. And if you're the Wizards, it's saving you a little bit of money this year. It's mostly a dead even trade. It saves them like $800K. But Pau Gasol is owed only $6.7 million next year is his partial guarantee. And Rudy Gay and Quincy Pondexter are both coming off the books. And so if you throw Pau Gasol's $6.7 million into the equation for next year, you're essentially getting out from under about $49 million from Otto Porter, since he's owed 55.7 over the next 2 years.
Watch Otto Porter on the Spurs. Greg Popovich turns him into a mid-range guy too.
Oh boy. And if you're for San Antonio, DeRozan and Aldridge don't come off the books until 2021 anyway. Aldridge is partial guaranteed for that year, but if you're going to be paying those guys, might as well just throw Otto Porter Jr. in there, too. That's my thinking.
Yeah, that's an interesting trio. It's another team. Whenever we send these guys to the West, it's like, I mean, how high does it elevate them in that brutal conference? I don't know if DeRozan, Porter, Aldridge trio is like super terrifying in the Western Conference, but it does make them better than they are, I think. So yeah, that one's interesting to me too.
Do you have any other Otto Porter destinations you want to see?
No, but I found a way to fix the Wizards entirely, but I'll save that for the end.
Oh, now that's a nice teaser. That leaves us with Beal, which I think it's so hard to trade all three of these guys, and he clearly has more trade value than any of them, but it's what are the Wizards looking back in return for, and how do teams really view him? Because he's not a top 20 player, and yet he is an all-star with two more years left on his deal. That's a unicorn trade situation. You're normally getting these guys with only a year left on their deal and worrying about them leaving in free agency.
And I think he could be better on certain other teams.
One of the teams that are interested in him, per Rick Bonnell of the Charlotte Observer, is the Charlotte Hornets. The deal for them would be Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Jeremy Lamb, Malik Monk, this year's first-round pick, lottery protected, and a 2020 second-round pick that'll be coming from the Nets or the Knicks in exchange for Beal and Jeff Green.
Okay, it was Beal and Jeff Green for
MKG, Jeremy Lamb expiring, Malik Monk, this year's first round pick, lottery protected, and a 2020 second round pick.
How many years does MKG have left?
He has a player option for $12 million next year.
Oh. I kind of like this deal. Kemba Walker and Bradley Beal together. I mean, Kemba's been out of his mind this season.
And if they're not going to move him, they need to get him help.
For sure. And that would be a super, super interesting backcourt. I think that's, at least for today's NBA, that's a better backcourt than Wall and Beal ever were. I think it's, would you say that's better than Lillard and McCollum?
I would say yes. Ooh.
I would say yes too.
Yeah, I'd say yes.
I think Lillard's probably a little bit better than Kemba, but I think Beal is comfortably better than McCollum.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So that's a really interesting backcourt. They would still have, they still have Batum after this deal. I guess Marvin Williams too, and then Cody Zeller. I like this deal a lot. I, like you said, if they're going to keep Kemba Walker, they've got to give him some kind of help. I mean, he's having these games where he goes off for 40 plus, and they still can't win. So something's got to change.
I think Charlotte might look at this as giving up too much, but Jeremy Lamb's expiring. The Wizards probably aren't going to pay him. And then MKG could fit into a bigger picture, but he's also only has a year left on his contract. And so you're not looking at him as this super building block. He's 25 years old. He'll be 26 for next season. Again, he could fit.
Beal is still in just his age 25 season too. So you're getting a youngish player back.
Right, but you're not getting any younger with this deal. And so I think
No.
I think the first round pick and Malik Monk are probably necessary inclusions was more my point. I think there was talk initially that Marvin Williams would be included in this deal.
I feel like I saw that somewhere.
It makes sense from just a salary filler perspective. I don't know what the deal then becomes. Are you getting Marvin Williams instead of MKG if you're Washington? In which case, I guess that's fine.
I guess if you're, again, it just comes down to what they want to do. How much longer does Marvin Williams have left on his deal?
He'll be off the books in 2020. So next season is his last deal. Player option, which I'm sure he'll exercise, worth $15 million.
So they save a little bit more money if they go with MKG instead of Marvin Williams.
Player option is worth 13, not 12. I misspoke before.
The difference is, $2 million. Yeah, it's for these NBA teams is maybe.
Look, if you can get Bradley Beal with that same framework, and then you're giving up Marvin Williams instead of MKG, who has been good when he was healthy this year, playing him off the bench at four, a little bit of five.
I think I would rather have Marvin Williams if I'm Charlotte, just because he can shoot.
Right, he hasn't been shooting the ball well this year. But he is an underrated defender. You can't really play him at the four, though, anymore is the problem. And I think they've sort of found that at times with their starting lineup. And he's played a bunch of five, and he's looked pretty good there. But MKG seems like the better fit for today. I mean, either one of them shouldn't be a deal breaker, I guess. You could talk yourself into saying, oh, if you get to keep them, then that's
great. I didn't realize Marvin Williams was only shooting 28% from three this year. But his three-point percentage in the 5 years before this one was 38, so I'm sure he'll rebound at some point. I just like guys who can shoot. That's and MKG, I don't think will ever be able to shoot. So if it was me, I think I'd probably want Marvin Williams.
From where I'm sitting, if I'm the Hornets, I'd do that deal even faster.
Yeah, I think I like that deal for both sides.
Another Bradley Beal trade. To the Lakers, the Lakers get Bradley Beal, Thomas Bryant, and Jeff Green. Washington receives Michael Beasley, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Kyle Kuzma, and Brandon Ingram. Lakers fans might get up in arms because they're giving up two youngsters.
They'll freak out about losing two of the young guys.
My reasoning here, though, is if you start to look at the free agency landscape, Kevin Durant, to me, is going to leave the Warriors. I'm all on board now. I think he's done. I don't think he's going to go somewhere where he's going to be viewed as a hanger-on or a number two, which would rule out the Lakers then. Jimmy Butler is expected to re-sign with the Philadelphia 76ers. I do not see Klay Thompson leaving the Warriors. Kawhi Leonard can still be considered a flight risk, but not only can the Raptors offer him that fifth year, now they're making it so his decision can no longer be a basketball one if he leaves.
Yeah.
And that, to me, would increase the likelihood that he returns. And so then what are you looking at? Kemba Walker, Chris Middleton, Tobias Harris. Kyrie Irving isn't joining the Lakers if he leaves Boston at all. And so if you can get Beal, who inferior, clearly, to Butler or Kevin Durant, obviously, Kawhi Leonard, obviously, but he has 2 years left on his contract. He's 25, probably the perfect offensive fit beside LeBron James. And what I also think has happened in Los Angeles, their young players are no longer as intriguing as they were this past summer because we've played more games. And nope. Brandon Ingram's shot profile is terrible. Lonzo Ball hasn't been playing great at the offensive end, still way too passive, even though he's shooting his three ball better. Josh Hart, his stock is probably through the roof, but if I'm the Lakers, I don't want to get rid of him because he's too important to a defense that is super fragile. And so if you're getting Bradley Beal back, sending out two expirings in KCP and Michael Beasley. KCP has a no-trade clause, by the way, so he would have to approve this deal. But with Kuzma and Ingram, if I'm the Lakers, I actually would do it, just because it does not look like, or at least looks less likely, that they're going to net a big fish over the offseason.
What are the wings left on the Lakers roster if they do that deal?
They'll have Josh Hart. They'll have... They could sign Carmelo Anthony. They'll have a roster spot for Melo.
That's going to give me pause, because I was trying to piece together a rotation as you were laying that deal out. And I actually I would like the idea of playing a lot of minutes with Beal as sort of a pseudo point guard, Josh Hart at the two, and then you fill in forwards and centers after that. But I just... If you deal Kuzma and Ingram, you're just a little – I think you're a little bit light on –
KCP too, yeah. That's
yeah, and KCP is another guy who can play some wing. So that's what would give me pause. But I do like the idea of Bradley Beal playing with LeBron James. I think that's a really, really good fit for both of those guys. One of those situations like I referenced earlier where I just think Beal would probably be better on a different team. So he's super interesting there. I just wonder if maybe you'd rework it if one of the young guys was maybe Lonzo or something like that, just so you can keep at least one more forward.
Yeah, unless you're trading John Wall, though, I don't know what the value is of having Lonzo in Washington. But if you're the Lakers, I think the preference would be to replace Ingram with Lonzo. If you replace Kuzma with Hart, you kind of still just run into the same problem. You don't have enough wings.
Yeah, Hart's like a guard/wing. So he's still a guy who can play multiple positions. I would want to keep him too, if I'm the Lakers.
You could build something around Rondo and Lance Stevenson's expiring deal instead of KCP's, would be something to explore.
Yeah, if it's truly expirings, or if it's like purely expirings that they want, then the Lakers are another team that could be helpful in that situation.
And I guess if you're keeping KCP, the wing rotation becomes a little more tenable.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have any other Bradley Beal spots? I know the Clippers have been mentioned, but I don't – not that they wouldn't – he would be a good fit there, but I don't know that, one, are they going to want to compromise their ability to carve out two maxes? And then second, I don't really know if I'm them who I'd want to give up. Do you want to give up Tobias Harris for Bradley Beal? I guess if you like that Beal has 2 years left on his deal. But even then, the stuff they're going to offer – outside of Harris for the Wizards, is it really going to appeal to them? If you want straight savings, then yes, the Clippers are a great trade partner, but they're not going to give you Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They'll probably give you Jerome Robinson, but I don't know what that does to wet Washington's whistle. And that it seems like just there are packages you can build rather easily to make it work financially. I just don't know that the Clippers will have the motivation to fulfill the residual value that Washington will want, just looking at young players and picks.
Yeah, they're an interesting location. And when you first mentioned their name, I thought, well, it seemed like for the last couple of years, they've almost had too many guys. That team, there was like two or three, not great players, but playable players at every position. So you'd think maybe you could consolidate some of that depth into Bradley Beal. So they're an interesting location for him. I like you said, I guess it would depend on how confident they are going into free agency. Do they really want to go for Beal instead of whatever they might get in free agency. The thing about trades is, especially if you're trading for a guy that's under contract, you get rid of some of the mystery of free agency. You can be super confident heading into the summer and wind up with nothing. So maybe you want the security of Bradley Beal. And if you could hang on to Tobias Harris, Bradley Beal and Harris would be an interesting duo to have at the top of any lineup. So they're interesting. Do you want to hear my deal that just starts them over?
Yes.
It's actually two deals. Maybe we could make it a four-teamer to be fun in some way. But let's just give all of Utah's expirings to the Wizards for Porter and Beal.
Oh, my God.
And then trade Trevor Ariza for John Wall straight up. Both of those deals work. You got to wait till January 15th for the Utah one because of favors. But I just saved the Washington Wizards. You're welcome, Wizards fan. You no longer have to deal with the ridiculous cap situation that your team put itself in. I will take all of the your welcomes on Twitter.
I want to know what Wizards fans are only interested in saving money in a Bradley Beal trade, though.
All of them.
The Jazz better be throwing Grayson Allen at a pick in that deal for Porter and Beal.
Oh, fine. I'll include those as well.
There we have it. Andy Bailey fixed the Washington Wizards. We spent an hour talking, and he did it in under 30 seconds.
Anything else before we wrap it up?
I think I'm flat out of trades. I exhausted all my Wizards scenarios, hypotheticals.
Well, if you want to talk to us about the Wizards or whatever else is going on in the NBA, you can find Dan on Twitter at Dan Favale, Favale. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show is at Hardwood Knox. The sponsor is at NBA_math. As always, if you haven't subscribed to the show, please do that. Leave a rating, leave a review, suggest us to your friends and family. I can think of no better Thanksgiving conversation topic than Hardwood Knox. So bring that up at your feasts tomorrow. Until next time, we leave you with the shout out to Benno Udry and Kyle Anderson.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.